At Ability Chiropractic, they do things differently. They believe lasting health starts with understanding how your body truly works, not masking pain with quick fixes. Their doctors take time to educate and empower you to take control of your wellness journey. Through gentle, customized adjustments, they help you restore proper function and unlock your body's natural healing power. That's why Columbus families have trusted Ability Chiropractic since 2012. See the difference for yourself. Book your appointment today at abilitychiro.com.
Do you really think all this is an accident? You think we crashed on this place by coincidence? Especially this place? We were brought here for a purpose, for a reason, all of us. Each one of us was brought here for a reason.
Brought here. And who brought us here, John?
The island.
Look, you want to push the button? You do it yourself.
If it's not real, then what are you doing here, Jack? Why did you come back? Why do you find it so hard to believe?
Why do you find it so easy?
It's never been easy!
It's a leap of faith, Jack.
Two players. Two sides. One is light. One is dark.
I see you in another life, brother. We have to go back!
We're going to need to watch that again.
Hello and welcome to The Storm, a Lost Rewatch podcast. My name is Dave Gonzalez, and in the flashback to my old apartment in 2004, there is, of course, a Dave Matthews song playing. What Dave Matthews song? It's Don't Drink the Water, at least for me.
My name is Joanna Robinson. There is obviously a flashback to my apartment in 2004. And when you flashback to my apartment in 2004, you will hear Dave Matthews singing Dreadin' Trails for a long, long time. The track is called So Much to Say.
And I'm Neil Miller, and in this flashback to 2005 me, which no one should want, Dave Matthews is playing Crash Into Me, because that's what 21-year-old Neil thought was going to get the job done. And he was wrong.
It took a weird turn right at the beginning. We're your three hosts of the Lost Rewatch podcast. In case this is your first time joining us, we are rewatching the ABC series Lost, which lasted for 6 seasons. We are on season 2, episode 6, Abandoned. This will be our last episode before we take a short break to cover the Star Wars series for the end of the Skywalker saga with Rise of Skywalker this December. But then we'll be coming back in the new year, January 2020, and continuing our Lost rewatch. We split every Lost podcast into two parts. The first part we call The Calm, and that is for people who might be rewatching Lost, or sorry, watching Lost for the very first time. Can't add re just in the front of rewatch just because you're a rewatch podcast. Doesn't apply to all situations. If this is your first time through with Lost and you don't want to hear any spoilers beyond season 2, episode 6, Abandoned, then you can stay in The Calm. There is an exception this week. Joanna, would you like to share with people what we've decided to share with you about the rest of season 2, even though it might be somewhat of a presented as a cliffhanger here in Abandoned?
Yeah, okay. So just so, I mean, I guess you can stop listening, I suppose, if you want to right now, but we're just going to say this. I did not consider the end of this episode a cliffhanger. We did not mean to leave you on like a big question mark of a note, but some of our listeners have already watched ahead to this episode and let me know in the Slack, the Patreon supported Slack that we have around this podcast, that they had a question mark about the end of this episode. So we are going to talk about the outcome of what happens to Shannon. And that is just something we are going to make part of our discussion in this podcast. So I'm going to say it right now. Are you ready? I'm scared to say it. Yeah, Shannon dies. Like, she's dead. She's dead at the end of this episode.
She's super dead.
She's super dead. So, like, I know you guys are like, oh, you've been ruined by years of twisty TV. But I'm here to tell you, Boone died, Shannon died. That's it. Let's move on. So
the show also does not plan to drag this out a long time.
I know. I feel like Jon Snow ruined you guys, but I'm here to tell you, Shannon, she did. So there you go.
We thought while planning this podcast that this would be a great time to just like take a break, wallow with some grief, think about some Star Wars, and then return to, you know, hatch mysteries and whatnot.
It's still great because the end of this episode is bonkers.
Well, I think a lot of people are questioning why we ended here, because several people have let me know that they are surprised we chose to end it here. And if you haven't watched ahead to episode 7, I'm not going to spoil episode 7 of season 2. But from my view, it serves as a kind of like a soft retelling of the pilot. It's a repiloting almost of Lost. I'll put it this way. It's a really good thing to come back to is the next episode. It will reorient all of us into the world of Lost. And so maybe this episode doesn't strike you as the perfect place to stop, but I'm hoping episode 7 will feel like a really good place to come back to. So that's the thinking behind the pause we're taking here.
And if you are one of those people that already knows we've made an excellent decision, you've watched the rest of Lost, and for you, we have The Storm, the second half of our podcast, where we get all spoilery and that is all based on our name, The Storm. We used to be Star Wars Spoilers. You could still support us at patreon.com/StarWarsSpoilers and get access to that Slack Joanna was talking about, which will not only, you know, allow you to talk to other people who are exactly where you are at the rewatch or maybe a little bit before and can help you with pacing some of these things out with the podcast episode. And as always, to our future friends who are coming back to The Storm, welcome back. Now you get to listen to The Storm. Excellent. A reminder that if you're listening to this today, it comes out tomorrow. We have a live show in Boulder, Colorado. We'll be talking about Star Wars. We will see you there in Boulder.
I'm already so cold.
Yeah. You go to Storm of Spoilers, or sorry, SOS Lives How, or SOS Live Show.com to reserve a spot if you are listening to this on Wednesday or anytime in Thursday afternoon and you're in Boulder.
If you're within driving distance.
Yep.
We got other games, than that, we got prizes. We will be there. We will be hanging out after the show.
It's extremely free.
It's extremely free. We're really excited to see everyone. A bunch of people are flying in, which is just very sweet. So we're excited to see everyone. Like I said, we'll be hanging out after the show with folks. We have a spot in mind. We'll be hanging out after the show. And then also, if you are in our Patreon, patreon.com/StormOfSpoilers, at the $10 level, you're part of our secret movie club, which means you get to watch a Star Wars with us live. And that is also happening in Colorado this weekend on Saturday. So it's not too late to join patreon.com/StormOfSpoilers. Join us at the small council level. You can come watch a Star Wars with us live in Colorado. Lucky you, honestly.
Lucky us.
Lucky us. No, that's
for being honest.
It's true. So that is what's going on. And usually this is a spot on the show where I read reviews. We have not had a review since October, folks. A domestic review. We've had some.
Which, as I'm told, was last month.
We've had some lovely international reviews, but no domestic reviews since October. We are parched for reviews. So if you have it in you to drop us a note about Lost or Star Wars, we really appreciate it. It really helps us.
You're going to make us have Damon Lindelof back on the podcast, aren't you? You needy, needy people.
You can also email us, hoststormpodcast.com. We've got a couple great emails this week. I think they all belong in our storm section, though. We got not a single calm email of late. So you're going to want to stick around for the storm to hear some of our listeners' insights. But you can email us, hoststormpodcast.com, if you have strong feelings about this episode and what happens to Shannon. You can find us also on stormpodcast.com. We've got a calendar up there. We've got a whole bunch of stuff. If you want to see the exact schedule of which Star Wars we'll be talking about when, you can go there. You can also follow us on Twitter at stormpodcast. And you'll want to stick around after the calm, no matter what, you'll want to stick around after the calm discussion we have about this episode, because our guest this week is the great Joe Reed, one of my favorite human beings, and I gave him a choice of any single season 2 episode to talk about, because he got in really early, and he said, I want the Shannon episode. So you can find out why in my conversation with Joe Reed, who is a big Shannon fan and kind of the perfect person to have on this episode. All right. If you follow me on any manner of social media, especially Instagram, you already know about my cat, my own little personal smoke monster who lives in my house. I love my cat. My cat is my favorite thing in my house. But by far the worst part about being a cat owner is dealing with cat litter. It's messy. It's smelly. It's heavy. Yeah, cat litter, it's downright barbaric. That's why I switched to Pretty Litter. Pretty Litter is Kitty Litter 2.0, and it shipped right to my door in a small, lightweight bag that lasts me the entire month. No more running to pet stores or storing heavy, open bags of cat litter in my closet. Not ideal. Pretty Litter takes care of that problem for me. Now, Dave, I know that you don't personally like cats, but I know you like me and like me to be happy. So why was Pretty Litter the right choice for me?
I don't like cats, but I do like facts about Pretty Litter. Pretty Litter has the next level odor protection. It uses super absorbent crystals that actually trap and conceal odor and moisture. No smell, no mess. Forget about that dirty clay or compost that's completely gross to clean up, I hear. But the best part about Pretty Litter is it even monitors your cat's health. Pretty Litter changes color to detect underlying illnesses before urgent medical care is needed, saving you money, stress, and potentially your cat's life.
That's useful because cats can't talk. Here's the thing, guys. I know what you're thinking. You're thinking, I need to switch to Pretty Litter. You can switch to Pretty Litter today by visiting prettylitter.com and using promo code STORM. For 20% off your first order. That's prettylitter.com. Promo code STORM for 20% off. prettylitter.com. Promo code STORM.
And we're back. Neil, remind us what happened this week on the island.
Absolutely, Dave. This week's episode, Abandoned, was directed by Adam Davidson. It was written by Elizabeth Sarnoff. It aired on November 9th, 2005. It takes place on days 47. 48 on the island. In flashbacks, we watch as Shannon's experience in the days following the death of her father, who, I will remind you, was killed in a car crash by Jack's future wife, who Jack decided to save instead of Shannon's dad. Just wanted to make sure that we remember that. Later, Vampire Diaries Boone shows up briefly and isn't entirely helpful as his mother cuts fatherless Shannon off and casts her out of her life of privilege. It's very sad. On the island, Saeed makes a hut for Shannon, and finally some sex happens on this show full of sexy people stuck on an island together. Unfortunately, tall, soggy Walt appears and ruins the moment. An argument ensues, resulting in Shannon taking off into the jungle with Vincent, who we'll note is not a bloodhound, in an attempt to find him and prove that she A, is not crazy, and B, has worth as a human. Elsewhere on the island, Charlie takes a little too much charge of Aaron's care. Locke pops by to teach Claire how to swaddle, then gives them both a bit of John Locke therapy. It's also worth noting that he now knows that Charlie has at least one Virgin Mary statue full of heroin. As the Taileys trek across the island, Sawyer makes friends and bleeds for the most part. Anna Lucia's hiking stories get super dark. Sawyer eventually passes out and must be carried through the jungle of mystery, and then, and I know you're not going to believe this, they lose Cindy.
Cindy
just lost a whole
straight
person.
Straight up disappears.
Straight up ghost. It all ends on a terrifying, slow motion, rain drenched shot of Saeed looking extremely chill. You see, he and Shannon, they were just having this incredible moment in the rain in the jungle where they're like, I love you. Yeah, I love you. I'm never going to leave you. And then tall, soggy Waltz and the Whisper Squad show up and lead Shannon right into Ana Lucia's line of fire. WTF, boom, lost. Fun fact of the week, Rose does not like the hatch. Another fun fact. Sorry, I thought that was going to be funnier.
Okay.
She's not on Team Hatch. Also, a fun fact, this actually was, I know we talked about how we're going to break after this episode. This was the show's return from a two-week break.
Whoops.
So the show took its break last week. I actually agree with Joanna. I think that the next episode, is a really good episode to come back on. So we'll start with this week's column question. This episode was advertised by ABC, sort of notoriously, as one where a major character dies. Be honest, up until the last couple seconds there, we were all pretty sure it was Sawyer, right?
Yeah, how shicey is that?
I think that to me is the most manipulative thing.
Yeah, someone talked to us about season one. There was a promo that was like, one of these characters will die. And like Arst was in the montage of the promo. Yeah. And that's who died. So I guess they were in like full throttle of like weird. Well, and then we talked a couple weeks ago, but that, you know, a spoiler or, you know, whatever, gossip scoop. On the blogs at the time was that a female character was gonna die. And, if you listen to us in the storm, for that episode a couple weeks ago, we were like, who are they talking about? And then immediately I'm like, oh yeah, Shannon. We were like, oh yeah, Shannon. All right, Shannon's gonna die. So yeah.
Yeah.
So
this one really comes out of nowhere.
I think if you're paying attention to all those things, you know, like the way that we watch Game of Thrones or whatever, you're paying attention to all those things, then you would know a woman is going to die. And if you know a woman is going to die, I mean, I guess I could have guessed one of the Taillys or...
I mean, Cindy does disappear.
Cindy? I mean, like, does anyone
right
care?
Before.
Well, that would have been very arts-like. But then again, I think if I knew that a woman was going to die and this episode starts and we get like a Shannon flashback, I would have been like, well, because it's that TV thing where just when, you know, we learn more or we endear more to a character, they're the most in danger. I don't know if that was as prevalent as it was when this actually aired, but definitely in a post Game of Thrones world, that's one way to look at things.
We have a gentle correction from last week. We were talking about
the
term tailies, and one of our listeners pointed out that, like, though they never say tailies in the show to mean people from the tail section of the plane, Lindelof and Cuse refer to them as tailies on their podcast, and they said that they refer to them that way in the writer's room. So it does come from the writer's room, even though it's not said on the show.
Right.
And this is the time when the Carlton Cuse Damon Lindelof podcast starts, right around here. And one of our listeners, DJ Empirical, who actually does our, theme, has made like an RSS feed, is making an RSS feed and is uploading those official podcasts. If you're a member of our Patreon Slack, you can like join our listeners in enjoying this feed that, DJ Empirical is curating, for them. And it's a fun way to revisit this, you know, official podcast that ran along with the show. So
more podcasting.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which was wildly ahead of its time.
He was also, since he's an audio guy though, he's like, I might have to improve their levels. He's like, it's pretty rough. So
I mean, it is
early
a
days.
Podcast from 2005.
Yeah. The most 2005 thing about their podcast are their audio levels.
No, I remember Rod Moore was for a while doing them with like Battlestar Galactica, but he would just like chain smoke while watching like a like a fine cut edit of it. And so you'd hear him like flicking and like dragging the cigarette and like clicking his lighter all the way through his podcast. But even now, like, there's been a lot of, there's a official Watchmen podcast, which is, you know, very good, but very different from the good old days of like, oh, the head of the writer's room and the showrunners, they're just going to sit down in a conference room. Like right before the show airs and record their memories about it. I miss that era of television podcasting.
I don't know if this is, I mean, I guess since it's not mentioned on Lostpedia, it must not be the longest time between beginning of episode and flashback, but I wrote it down and it's a full... 9 minutes before Shannon's flashback starts in the episode. Like, you're watching the episode for a while before you're like, oh, it's a Shannon episode. Okay. The only Shannon episode. Here it is. The one and only.
It gives you a few minutes to be like, are we going to get a Taillys flashback episode? But no, you're not. Because you know why? Saeed, that he's been absent since fixing a computer in the hatch. He's been building a love hut off to the side.
Love hut. Of, just a little, like a, please.
It's like out of piece, part of a fuselage and some leaves, and it's all
he's
very
got candles,
nice.
He's got some lavender. He's just killing it.
Yeah, he's his really since his adventures in the jungle, returning from Russo and then retrieving the baby. Saeed's had a pretty easy time going with it, and he's had time to be building.
Saeed's basically retiring after all that mess. He's like, I'm just going to build a shack and hang out with Shannon, because that was wild.
It is interesting how we've been so preoccupied with mystery, both with the raft guys meeting the tailies and the hatch, that we've allowed, you know, to be fully domesticated issues on the beach now. We have Saeed's love hut, and Charlie and Claire have become like this married couple that are debating how to best raise a baby.
I can't. Guys, I have a lot of strong feelings about this episode, but my hatred for Charlie in this episode is it's just under my aggravation with the writers for killing off Shannon exactly when they kill her off. I think it's a really shitty time to kill her off, when she's like, I'm worthless. Say it's like, you're not, I love you, and then she dies. I get really mad about it every time. But can you bleep that? Bleep, yeah, that? Okay. Charlie being such a overbearing jerk about Claire and her baby is just
like an unnecessary jerk.
Just
like, you don't have to. Nope. You don't have to be that guy.
Nope.
Just got a lot of lot to Which learn is, about responsibility.
Essentially, what John tells him at the end is like, "Yeah, but you're also like a heroin addict, so like, chill."
Yeah, some good advice from John Locke, but it is, yeah, I have a real personal dislike of people who like assume they know a parenting situation from the inside out by observing it for a little while, because I don't know, it always feels like.
Yeah, no, that's a super annoying thing, because I think that as we're seeing with Claire, as the show's exploring a little bit, it's like nobody teaches you how to do that stuff, especially when you're getting on a plane to go give your baby away. Like, right. That's not like Claire was obviously unprepared for this, and maybe have a little empathy for that instead of like being like, how do you not know? Especially because it's Charlie and he does know the story, obviously.
Well, I also feel like I see where Charlie's coming from, but I don't understand it, because he's holding the fact that she wanted to give the baby up for adoption before she gave birth to it, like, as a rational decision, where I feel like, you know, there's tons of like medical evidence that, you know, once you hold your biological child, like that sort of thing can change. Anyway, but Joanna's right. Charlie has a big asshole moment.
Maybe stop being a dick, Charlie.
He's just having a hard time not being balanced by heroin.
Let's talk about John Locke in this episode, though. And we can talk more in the storm if you want to, Dave. But I John comes over, is extremely helpful to Claire, teaching her how to swaddle her baby. I Joe and I talked about this, but I cannot believe there is not a like single like mother on that beach. I mean, like, not like, I don't want to be like define things by gender roles or whatever, but I'm like John Locke is the person giving Claire, like, no, where are the takes a village, and it shouldn't just be fucking Charlie who knows nothing, and John. It should be like, where are the other people on the beach to help Claire? Anyway, John's lovely, swaddles the baby, but what I really love is that when like Charlie shows up and is like the worst, John doesn't really like exacerbate the situation. He's just like, oh, perfect timing. Okay, he shares a little look with Claire, but like, he's very like even keeled about. He's not like Charlie. Claire is expressing misgivings about Charlie's over involvement and possessiveness around this baby, and the way that he is like talking down to her all the time. John's like, oh, I understand. Also, these other things. Yes, I support you, but also I'm not going to like sit here and shit talk Charlie. Whereas I would be like, that piece of shit needs to keep his little hobbity face out of your business, is what I think. And then John just like graciously ups and leaves. So like, what do you think of how John handles this interaction with Charlie and Claire?
Mm-hmm.
I know what I think.
Oh, go ahead, Neil.
I think he knows that he's going to get a chance. Well, okay, so during this conversation, Claire mentions the Virgin Mary statue. So at that point, John's like, well, I can't make too big a deal out of this moment right now, because then I got to bring up the heroin thing.
But he could have.
It's like,
I mean, like, why didn't he tell Claire right in that moment?
He could have, but that's not exactly John's style. He knows that later he's going to get Charlie alone, get, you know, sort of, he's being manipulative. I mean, I feel like he's manipulating in a way that's supposed to be helping Claire, or helping Charlie not be a heroin addict. So he's like doing it for the right reasons. But you know, in that moment when she mentions the Virgin Mary, John's like, oh, I'm going to hold on to that. Like, I'm just going to hold on to that information for a little bit.
But that is relevant information to have. If you know someone on the island has, like, an addiction problem, and then they're, you know, toting around some heroin.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, although John Doe's, he does know that it's only limited to Charlie, as far as he knows, and that Charlie isn't, like, super tweaked out. So it's not like clear that Charlie's using again. It just might be that Charlie's hiding it. I think John's just really smart about, he has a good intuition about what Charlie is going through, or like what things drive Charlie. So I feel like if Charlie were doing heroin right now, which I don't think that he is, cause he's just right. We've only seen him just sort of have the Virgin Mary. We haven't seen him do any heroin lately.
Right.
I feel like if he was back on the heroin in full, not only would we know it as the audience, but John would probably be able to see it. So I feel like he's playing it cool because he knows that this is cool. This is okay. This is not great, but it's okay for now. I don't know. Maybe he's wrong.
I think Neil's mostly right, and that it's like the social.
John's being manipulative.
the survivor-like social currency he gets by standing up for Claire in that moment and trying to like shoo Charlie away, he doesn't need beyond like teaching her to swaddle, and the power he gets to have over Charlie reminding him that he has his secret, and to, you know, walk the straight line, or, you know, control his behavior in any way, actually, it's much more powerful to him than more bonus points with Claire, who he's built a cradle for and taught to swaddle, and he's like in good with Claire.
Yeah, there's no political value in blowing up Claire and Charlie's relationship in this moment.
But there is in inserting himself. Well, I guess there is. John Locke is still.
He seemed like he just wanted to help Claire.
You guys are nuts.
Make the baby stop crying. Yeah.
He's still floating around, and I'm assuming at some point he's going to make a button plea for some of these people, because that's supposed to be his job. This, I guess, could have been Evangeline Lilly, who isn't in this episode, but because she doesn't know about Charlie's past, dictates it be Locke. But I don't know. I miss Evangeline Lilly.
You guys, this just in.
Why isn't Kate doing anything?
This just in. Sorry, someone just messages to me while we're recording that Damon Lindelof supported the release of Snyder Cut movement. Don't know what to do with that information.
You know what? We are a podcast that supports the ABC series Lost by rewatching it. And future Damon Lindelof decisions would be like having opinions about George Lucas while covering the original trilogy and prequels and things. Maybe we could, we'll just put some blinders on. Maybe. You really threw me here, Joanne.
I would delete that message and pretend like that was sent to you by mistake.
I mean, I just.
Or do we know the person who sent that to you isn't a Russian? Like, are we sure this isn't part of a hoax to like get Vanity Fair against Damon Lindelof so that, like, I don't know, Trump,
this is 2020? Off topic, but
I'm not
this
sure.
this is why the current resurgence of the release the Snyder Cut push is annoying to me, because Warner Brothers is about to release a Disney Plus competitor. And if they were to like slap something together and call it a Snyder Cut to make people subscribe, now would be the time they decide to do it. Stop talking about it. You're going to make this thing happen. It's not going to be good. So on Lost,
No, I just, I Damon Lindelof definitely posted this on his Instagram an hour ago. He wrote, I'm not saying I've seen it, but if I had, I would unequivocally support the powers that be to hashtag release the Snyder Cut. Here's my issue with this whole thing.
Is this like a creator's rights thing?
I'm just going to say this really quickly and then we can move on. The hashtag release the Snyder Cut, like Gal Gadot and Damon Lindelof and other people that I want to like and respect doing this, it validates a really shitty strain of the fandom. And that's a bummer because I know that Damon has had his own issues with like bad fans. And so the fact that this is like, I would almost support Damon if he wants to, because I respect him so much. If he wanted to be like, you know, I would love to see Zack Snyder's Justice League. That burns me less than hashtag release a Snyder Cut. Cause using the language of these people who have been bullying and abusing people on the internet for countless time. I don't know. You can cut all of this if you want to. It is off topic, but it's frustrating. Anyway. On Lost.
on Lost, he shot Shannon. Shot her right in the chest is what he did. Didn't have anything to do with the Snyder Cut.
I will say this about this episode. This is a pretty cold-blooded episode of Lost.
It's really rough. It's really
absolutely
rough.
In that it manipulates the audience a little bit because it's about Shannon, and then Shannon gets shot at the last second. It really puts, it's really, like, all the darkest, worst stuff that happened to Shannon that, you know, sort of other characters along the way get these like long drawn out things where we see why they are the way they are. But then their decision to kill Shannon here made this where it's like all of a sudden we've got to tell all the bad stuff that happened to Shannon in this flashback. And it's just like constantly horrible. Then you get to the end and she gets shot and it's like, what?
It just seems like really lazy because I'm like, we love Lost. That's why we're doing this whole thing. This is a very bad example of this show because to lazily push extreme sympathy for a character the very episode you're going to kill them is just, that's bad storytelling. You know what I mean? Like, if you want to like give Shannon an episode, reframe her narrative so we like kind of understand why she's so like weird about money and like all that sort of stuff, and maybe not like excuse her faking being, you know, abused by a boyfriend in order to, you know, bilk money out of Boone, but, you know, slightly understand it more or whatever. Make it an earlier episode of this season. Give us some time to sit, a few episodes to sit with that. Something we should mention here that we've talked about in the storm already as well is that according to the Lostopedia timeline, it's, you know, nailing down the exact dates is always like a little difficult to me, but according to Lostopedia, Boone dies on Monday, November 1st, and Shannon dies on Monday, November 8th. It has been a week since Boone died and Shannon dies. So.
I mean, it's true. It is still only day 48.
Yeah. So, Shannon dies a week later. And like, I get it. Like, these characters are not working for them. Joe and I talked about maybe some ways in which they could have made Boone and Shannon work. But if Boone and Shannon aren't working and they need to get rid of them, fine. But I really have a hard time with the way they did it for both of them. Cause I feel like they just sort of like threw up their hands, gave up, and like quickly just sort of like, okay, let's get ourselves out of here and move on to the next thing, sort of thing.
Well, you're right. You're both right that it is weird that they deal with it in an episode where Shannon doesn't get a win. Where, like, yeah. When she says, like, she's worthless and she doesn't, like,
well,
she's right.
She kind of gets a win, and then she gets shot 10 seconds later.
Yeah. I mean, Saeed sees Wet Waltz
the moment where, like, that whole sequence where Saeed helps her calm down, where they say, I love you, and then they both see Walt is, like, that's her win. But then it immediately goes bad.
Well, but it's so easy to read that as then the show abandons her in the exact same way that the, you know, yeah. It's thematically is showing her being abandoned, which is just like a weird choice to consciously make. but, you know, yeah, I mean, you're right. I guess the character wasn't working. It was only working because I don't think they were able to lean into like the more John Lockean archetypes with her. Like, she could have been another trust power player.
I disagree with that characterization of John Locke, but yes.
She could have been like a Cersei or something, where we understood, we enjoyed watching her be bad instead of we're just annoyed by her.
And I think,
I don't know, not to spoil
too much, but I think there are characters coming for whom that is true. They couldn't make it work with Shannon. It's too bad. I think Maggie Grace is a great performer. Maybe this wasn't her finest hour. Maybe there was just like a cool long arc to do for her. The way that potentially they're setting up for other characters, who are watching on a redemption path, but they couldn't make it work. So,
Didn't happen.
I would like to say something in defense of Shannon's story. You said that the issue is that her character wasn't working. I will say this. It worked in one way that I very vividly remember, because my mom, who watched Lost with me a lot, she hated Shannon first season, which I think there was a lot of that going around.
Pretty common. Yeah.
She's not a fan of Shannon, but I tell you when she did start to become she's a big fan of Saeed. And I think she got to a point where Shannon's story was starting to work. And then it's almost like right as they started to sort of figure out that they could maybe even have one of these relationships that could kind of be charming and interesting. And then they just kill Shannon. It's like doubly frustrating. If you were, say, a person who didn't like Shannon and then started to like Shannon and Saeed together, then they also stole that from you.
P.S. They've been on the island for a month and 10 days and say,
right.
I love you. What?
I mean, it's moving fast, but, and I think it's interesting too. This is another piece of evidence that the way the show is portraying these characters is that a lot of them have settled into their lives on the island, which I don't think matches with how a real person would continue to react. Right. Like, if you were on an island for 48 days, you would still be trying to get off the island, maybe?
It definitely seems like at least the people on the beach would be as invested in some of the mysteries that we as an audience are invested in, because we've been invested in those mysteries for a lot longer than they have. Like, I'd still be terrified of the others. Like, we just thought we were going to hide in a hatch because they were going to come, like, massacre us, but now it's like they didn't come, and there's a hatch of mystery, and like there's a washing machine in there, and some people know about it. There's all these things, like the raft went off, and I guess they did talk last week about how it could take them like weeks to find like a shipping thing, but I feel like there would be a lot more anxiety on the beach than what's actually portrayed at this point.
Yeah, like what are you doing if you're like someone who is among the other 40, maybe you even have some parenting experience? But you're not part of the cool club. Like, what's your life like right now? You're just chilling on the beach? I don't know.
Yeah, I guess there should be more scavenging because, Shannon visits, you know, Michael and Walt's old hut and they like still have good stuff. I mean, don't take their personal items. That's kind of asshole-ish. You know, you don't want them coming back with rescue and you've like ransacked everything, but like, we need some more tarps other places, surely. Saeed has managed to squirrel away enough to make a love hut. Why aren't we conserving our materials on the beach? I got a lot of questions about the world building of this society.
Got a lot of logistical questions about this camp.
I have a very important question.
Go.
Yes.
It's one that Garfunkel and Oates proposed many years ago, which is, why isn't there more fucking on this island? It's a great song. If you have watched all of Lost and you want to listen to this song, you should. If you have not, you should not listen to this song because there are spoilers in the lyrics. But this song is basically about how we are tied to a tree in a jungle of very attractive people. And thus far, I believe the only people to bone down are Shannon and Saeed. So congrats.
I mean, that's also the explanation for why no one has parenting skills except for John, because he's the only person who's not young and hot. Or Rose and Bernard.
I feel like
they're just old. They're old. That's not.
No, I'm gonna make a bid here. I'm gonna say when I saw John Locke,
Rose is hot.
When I saw John Locke swaddle that baby and be really supportive to Claire, I was like, why isn't the ship of this show Claire and John Locke? Because. Okay. I will request that our listeners back me up because Well, I was talking to Joe Reed about this. I was like, when I was younger, I was like, how silly that Charlie should feel threatened by John because John's an old man. And watching it now, I'm like, listen, Terry O'Quinn is, Diana, our producer, thinks Terry O'Quinn is a fucking dreamboat. And I kind of agree. And like, and then get you a man who will like swaddle your baby and like hold it and be very supportive and not shitty like Charlie. Yes. Team John Luck. John Luck can get it. That's what I all have right. to say.
So, I can, there's you, no all argument. All you have to do in return is that.
Push his button. Just push his button.
That's it.
John Locke, all he's doing is using all the skills he has to convince people to go down and push that button.
Except it's only like six people allowed in that hatch or whatever.
And one of the people who's already been to the hatch has already said, I'm good.
I'm going to go build a wall like that instead. Thanks. Oh, although, yeah, Rose.
I guess that makes
and
two.
Rose, yeah.
Yeah. Because Rose is like, she shows up in this episode to just be like, I don't trust that hatch that we haven't seen in two episodes.
Well, it's also like we keep reminding us sure. about Rose and Bernard, right? Because she's like, mm-hmm. she's yeah. like, what a bummer to lose the one person you care about this island. And Harley's like, oh, this poor lady, crazy lady's in denial that her husband is definitely dead. And then it's like, cut to Bernard. In
which
the jungle.
Seems like a good time to pivot to the other side of the island yeah. as we continue our weird death march. Well, it becomes a death march this week after being a weird search for Michael, searching for Walt.
It was everybody's trying to leave for vacation, but somebody had to go to the bathroom as we were mm-hmm. all trying to get in the car episode.
Yes.
It's like, we can't leave yet.
So they finally get moving again this week after Echo returns with our three rafties, or two of our rafties, because Sawyer is in bad shape. As his shoulder wound is getting worse, and he can't even banter with Ana Lucia anymore. He's just dragging his carcass through the jungle, which makes Mr. Echo stop following Ana Lucia's directions to follow the coastline to the beach, and instead cut inward to the jungle, where they have to make a stretcher in a field of green like things that look very similar to one that Saeed and Shannon are walking through similarly, but then the Taileys have to climb that hill where they lose Cindy. Either way, through magic or actual geography,
it's just that hill up, where they lost Cindy.
Yeah,
that's the whole thing. That's the whole story of how Cindy got lost. They were climbing a hill and then she was gone.
What was the last thing Cindy said they should probably keep moving and leave Sawyer behind, right? That was the last thing Cindy says.
Yeah, that's the last time anybody registered Cindy.
I think I heard
Cindy.
Her say, crikey, Tommy Kangaroo down. It's time for Australian Accent Corner.
Here we go.
In honor of our disappeared friend, Cindy the flight attendant, we hardly knew you. You just came back, and now you're disappeared for now. Actress Kimberly Joseph, who plays Cindy. Is she a real Australian or no? Neil Miller.
This one's super tough because I think it's kind of disrespectful to say no, like to assume that she's not, because she's been on the show more than once. So it's like it's easy for somebody who's like one episode and done. But Cindy keeps coming back. So I'm going to go with yes.
I'm going to say no based on the way she asks about the kids this episode. It sounded not correct to me.
What about those kids? Oh, so many good questions. There's so many fun questions this episode. Like, what about the kids? We keep hearing about this Goodwin fella. And, you know, I liked you better when you didn't talk. That's another good line in this episode, right? And you're like, what? When did he not? Yeah. What's happening? Anyway, we'll find out maybe. Kimberly Joseph was born in Vancouver, but she moved with her family at the age of three. She studied in Switzerland and also in New York. But, you guys, this is my new favorite Cindy fact. Kimberly Joseph, who played Cindy, co-hosted the Australian version of the TV show Gladiators from 1995 to 1997.
What, like American Gladiators?
Uh-huh, but Australian Gladiators.
Did she do it in an Australian accent?
I don't know.
Oh, this is a rabbit hole.
Yes, and... whoa, okay. Yes, I just want to find out the names of the Australian gladiators. Okay. Side quest question. Can either one of you name a single Australian gladiator for me right now?
Tasmanian Devil.
No. Neil, first one wins. First one to get a real Australian gladiator wins. Neil.
Kangaroo Jack.
No. Dave.
Phoenix.
No. Neil.
Crikey.
Nope. Dave.
Barracuda.
No. Neil.
Crocodile Dundee.
You're not taking this seriously. Dave.
Outlaw.
Ooh, that's a good one.
That is a good one, but no. Convict.
Convict.
Oh, that's mean.
Too close to home, or whatever. I don't actually know. That's probably...
The Woodsman. The Backwoodsman? The Outwoodsman?
No, they're just named the same things that, like, similar to American...
Oh, Pyro.
Writers. Nope, keep going.
Fire. Flame ball.
Do you say flame ball?
Yes.
I'm going to accept it. There's one called flame. Good job.
Yes.
The gladiators are... The Australian gladiators are Commando, Condor, Cougar, Force, Hammer, Predator, Taipan, Tornado, Tower, Vulcan, Blade, Cheetah, Delta, Electra, Flame, Fury, Glacier, Rebel, and Storm. So,
ooh.
I feel like we learned a lot today about Cindy and the Australian gladiators.
We're named after our Australian gladiator. This podcast has been named after Australian gladiator the whole time.
Storm.
All right. That was an interesting turn
for
incredible. Australian accent. So technically, my ear is wrong, because if she hosted that much Australian Gladiator, surely she does an okay enough Australian accent to say kids. Sorry, guys. It's not like
the kids.
4 billion beans.
What about the kids?
What about the kids? Neil,
yes.
We already talked about the quote, but you didn't get to say the title. Sorry.
Oh, yes. Well, as Joanna mentioned, there's a lot of Jungle of Mystery moments in this one. So we're going to get tied to a tree with Mr. Echo and Ana Lucia this week. When Ana Lucia says, I liked you better when you weren't talking. Which is a huge thing to say that we now need a bunch of answers for. Which is like, wait, he wasn't talking? When? Why? So
did
I think that's
really
interesting.
Like
Ana Lucia drops a lot of exposition on us this week. She stops every like 100 feet to give us another story about how people were killed. So I think there's just a huge data dump on the Tailies. And, you know, I think that portends more of what we're going to see in season two, of just learning what happened to them.
Yeah. She sounds like she's being a little bit over the top, to like maybe scare our losties until Cindy disappears and the whispers mm-hmm. start up. And then you're like, oh, maybe Ana Lucia isn't crazy.
Yeah. The reason why I like her talking about liking him more when he wasn't talking was, I do think that so far of the Tailies, outside of wanting to see Rose and Bernard back together, the most interesting thing happening is the relationship between Mr. Echo and Ana Lucia, like mm-hmm. trying to figure out what they're doing, mm-hmm. like what have they gone, because they seem like they're co-leaders at this point. I think our assumption was that Ana Lucia was the leader, but it really feels like,
but
you know,
she backs
she's like
down
that
when
one's going to be
like,
on you
when he makes yeah. the decision. She's like, okay.
You right, know. So they seem to be co-leading, and they seem to be counting bodies, which is super dark.
It's just like, it's frustrating. Like, Dave's least favorite thing is when people don't talk to each other, right? And so, like, I understand, you know, they had a lot of trauma happen to them. I really love the line, they took a lot of things, right? And mm-hmm. I think yeah. Michelle Rodriguez delivers it really well. Like, it's a really, really good line this episode. Dave, did you just fall down?
Yeah, everything's fine.
but it's frustrating to me that they didn't have like a moment before they went into the jungle where they're like, okay, we're gonna go in the jungle, we all have to be silent, like absolutely silent, like I swear to God silent. They took a bunch of our people, be silent, as opposed to like Ana Lucia being like, be silent, but like Michael's like, I demand answers at full volume. And I'm just like, no. This is bad planning. So bad, so tense. But I do love the part where they like, they build a stretcher and they all help to carry Sawyer up the cliff, and then Cindy disappears. It's just like such a good moment because they're all helping, and it's like on the Great British Bake Off when they all help each other, and I'm like, they're all helping, even though Sawyer sucks, they're all helping, and then fucking Cindy goes right in the trash. Sucks.
Yep.
So
second teamwork happens. It turns out the Tailies were right. They're everywhere. They'll just take you. You'll just disappear.
Yep.
But yeah, then the episode ramps up right after we notice Cindy's gone to the climax, in which we get a bunch of the whispers, which thus far have only been heard by like one or two people. Now it's like definitely not an auditory hallucination. These are definitely whispers around the jungle. Because both parties hear it. Maybe the same whispers? I don't know. Things get a little timey-wimey, so we get to have a nice moment with Shannon right before she gets shot. But I think it's the same whispers causing them to run into each other. Maybe because Walt lured them? Or ghost Walt? He's wet for sure. We know that.
Soggy.
And
like, is tall soggy Walt on the Whisper Squad now, or what?
He's like captain of the Whisper Squad.
He's like, yeah, he's like leading the Whisper Squad and leading Shannon to her immediate death.
He's telling them to be quiet, which makes sense because then they maybe won't get shot. But then what does he think's going to happen
when he runs off?
He just like walks away towards the danger. Like, doesn't that seem a little off for,
I mean,
like,
it's hard for me to say what's going through Soggy Walt's mind.
Yeah, if he's a kid, great. If he's a vision, I guess it makes less sense. If he's some sort of
20-year-old, it's hard to tell.
Yep, definitely. If he's some sort of, like, angel demon thing, maybe he is trying to kill her. Who knows?
What really matters is that Saeed sees him. So it's not like Shannon is bonkers, right?
Right.
Yes. Saeed sees tall Soggy Walt. That tells us something. But it's pretty funny because, like, you need to have this moment where Shannon gets away from Saeed, right? So that she can get shot and he, like, comes upon her, right? But it's just funny because, like, Naveen Andrews has to play, like, shocked. Like, what the fuck did I just see?
Yeah.
Then he stumbles over a tree root.
Well, it's odd because that shocked moment retroactively makes him a liar because he's like, I believe you, I love you, and they hug each other. Yeah. And then he looks up and he's shocked, and it's like, you would not be that shocked if you actually believed
him. No, he didn't.
Which is nice. Calm Shannon down and everything, yeah. But definitely makes Saeed a liar by giving him a big moment where he's like, oh no, I don't even know what the ramifications of this situation are. I was just trying to get laid again. Now we're dealing with like wet children in the jungle. Out of his league. Well, but you know what is in his league? Different ways to punish all the people that just shot his girlfriend.
I mean, that really is the big question, is what happens next. Which I think this episode, for all of its obvious faults as an episode of Lost, it ends with some questions.
Yeah, not that we're like totally on Ana Lucia's side because she's like she's been hostile to some of our pals. So far this season, but like, you know, we met her in the airport bar with Jack. She was smiling. She was drinking tequila. Like, we're interested in her.
She is a fellow passenger of Flight 815. She's not,
yeah,
someone else.
For her to be the one to shoot Shannon is very like Jaime Lannister charges down Daenerys Targaryen on a dragon. You know what I mean? It's like, oh no. We like people on both sides of this shooting scenario. What are we going to do? So, yeah, it's, I mean, that at least is interesting. And I think the way that the episode is edited, I think it is surprising in a cool way. Like, I don't think you expect Shannon to run into Ana Lucia's gun. And you get, like, you want, like, Michelle Rodriguez as Ana Lucia, like, for episodes, not just this episode, but for episodes, has been, like, ready to shoot somebody, you know what I mean?
Right.
So, like.
Well, earlier in this episode, they talk about the one bullet, right? She's only got one bullet left.
Right.
Or no, Michael only had one bullet.
Oh.
No, that's the same gun.
Yeah, okay.
Because they got it. Yeah. And that leads us to this episode's Boone Carlisle Memorial Falling Down Award. Which goes to Bloody Shannon.
Shannon Rutherford. I would like to say,
keeps it in the family.
That before y'all pointed out that Shannon was the obvious choice, I was like, obviously it's Sawyer.
I was
from
like,
Bleeding.
We have to give it to Shannon. This is her one shot at an award.
That's true. Sawyer may continue on to fall another day.
I do really like Ian Somerhalder in this episode, by the way. I get
everything
really...
except the haircut is perfect.
Did I have it right that this was Vampire Diaries time?
I don't think that would explain the hair. I don't think he's quite. I think he's growing out his hair maybe for Vampire Diaries. I don't know that he's on it yet.
He does this weird mullet thing where part of it conforms to his head and then it like poofs out.
It's true. It's a fashion mullet. It's very tough. And like, especially when he shows up at the funeral and, Shannon also has like her 18-year-old wig on. It's just like a lot of tough hair happening all at once. No, the Vampire Diaries didn't start till 2009. So okay. I don't know. Maybe this is like his depression mullet. He's like, I got fired off the biggest TV show in the world and I grew a mullet.
Everyone's asking me about it. That's, I can't do a press tour without that.
So, I also,
don't you guys want to see Rules of Attraction?
This is
that's a good movie, actually. I like that movie.
This is a weird, I think we should try and figure out which of these flashbacks the people look the right age. Because I gotta be honest, when Shannon was like doing the I'm 18, when she says she's 18, I'm like, that's the least believable one so far. Like,
I don't know that it's the least believable, but it's pretty tough. I think.
Yeah. Like, what is the least believable flashback age? Is it Jack's hair?
I mean, Jack's hair is the worst.
Shannon.
Jack's hair is the worst wig. I'm still really partial to John Locke's receding hairline situation. Mm.
I think maybe I'm trying to think of what the best ones are. Charlie's a pretty easy one. His are all pretty recent, I guess, so far. And then Claire. Claire pulled it off, or Emily DeRaven. She pulled off looking like a couple years younger.
I think that's right.
But some of these they're getting a little weird.
Well, speaking of weird hair moments, that'll lead us to our Leslie Arts Memorial Ironic Statement Award, which comes from a weird hair Boone who enters the episode saying, "Death sucks, doesn't it?" Poor Boone.
Get it?
1 week ago, you died.
Get it? Because I just died. You're about to die. Dad died. All this crazy stuff.
Yes. Doesn't it suck?
I'm looking at Ian Somerhalder's hair when he was on Smallville, which is right around this time. I think it's his Smallville hair.
Smallville hair.
Yeah, he's got some, I don't know, or maybe that was before. I don't know, what were you doing? He had a little, 2005 was like
twice,
a little.
Twice in this podcast, the DC Universe has come in to shit on my memories of Lost.
2005 was a weird gap year for Ian Somerhalder. I think he was just going through some stuff because he got fired off Lost and it was tough. And then his hair was.
I mean, listen, it sucks.
It worked out really well for him. Honestly, he's set for life with that Vampire Diaries money. So,
The Storm, a Lost Rewatch podcast, is brought to you by Skillshare.
Skillshare is an online learning community with thousands of amazing classes covering dozens of creative and entrepreneurial skills. You could take classes in everything from photography and creative writing to design, productivity, and more. So whether you're returning to a longtime passion project, like we're returning to Lost, or challenging yourself to get outside of your comfort zone, like Joanna doing accents, or simply exploring something new, Skillshare has classes for you.
How dare you? I've been exploring Skillshare over the last couple weeks. It's been really, really fun. They have all these really cool classes taught by experts, online classes taught by experts. You can take photography, fine art, music production, film and video, marketing. Basically, like if you want to become, maybe you've always thought, maybe I want to become a more creative person, or maybe I want to actually do like creative things for a living. Skillshare can help you with that, not just with the creative classes that they have, but with, you know, classes on how to promote yourself, how to get freelance work, how to do web development, basically how to like package the creative stuff that you do. So there's just like a lot of really good ideas, a lot of really good avenues that you could pursue, all taught by experts in the various fields. It's a fantastic service. I've been really, really loving playing around with it.
Right now, can join millions of students already learning on Skillshare with a special offer just for our listeners. You can get 2 months of Skillshare for free. That's right. Skillshare is offering listeners of The Storm 2 months of unlimited access to thousands of classes for free. To sign up, go to Skillshare.com/The Storm. Again, go to Skillshare.com/THESTORM to start your 2 months now. That's Skillshare.com/The Storm.
We should note that Shannon dies in the same clothing she was wearing the night that Boone died a week ago.
I mentioned this in the storm, but she's back in the exact same outfit for some reason. So, there you go. Don't put on that pink shirt, Shannon. And, yeah, I think that's it for the com, right? Did we do it?
Yeah, let's go, to your discussion with Joe Reed.
Hey folks, Joanna here. I just wanted to let you know really quickly, Joe Reed and I have a long discussion in this interview about the TV show Survivor, which we've talked about before on this podcast as an inspiration for Lost. I wanted to let you know that our conversation was recorded before the latest episodes of Survivor, which have had some very controversial subject matter, themes, treatments, a whole bunch of Survivor controversies happening. I just want to let you know that that hadn't happened when we recorded, so if we don't address it or even mention it, that is why. Otherwise, please enjoy my conversation with Joe Reed. So I am thrilled that we are joined on the podcast for this episode. My pal, Joe Reed, managing editor at Primetimer.com, co-host of This Had Oscar Buzz. Joe, I gave you the all of season two to pick from.
Yes. You gave me a wide lane. No one had claimed anything, I don't think, by this
and
point.
I think David Simpson claimed something and that was it.
Right,
you
right.
You picked the Shannon episode and I am thrilled that you did because now we talk about Shannon. Shannon's flashback episode.
Her
Shannon's
only flashback episode.
Death
I know.
Episode. So yeah, this was like something I debated. I was like, should we, when I wanted to have you on and the way we're going to talk about this episode in general, I was like, should we like pretend that it's possible Shannon could come back next week? And I'm like, nah, I mean, she's dead. All right, Shannon.
Yeah. She looked pretty dead at the end of that episode. We can, cause you guys have a really interesting mandate with the storm and the calm and whatnot and what we're pretending.
Yeah, we
ignorance
don't know.
For, right.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, right. It's a little tricky sometimes. But it's kind of a fun experiment because it forces you to consider each episode sort of on its own in that way. You know what I mean? Okay, I'm going to start with a very important question for you, Joe Reed. But even before we get to Shannon.
Yes.
John Locke.
Yes.
Daddy or Zaddy?
Oh, this is interesting. I mean, Island, John Locke, like, everybody looks better on the island. It's a thing that everybody who watches Survivor knows, that, like, everybody looks better 2 weeks into the whole thing than they do at the very beginning. Whenever they come back for the reunion and they're all, like, scrubbed up, it's never as good. Zaddy's weird to me. I don't know. Zaddy feels like the property of, like, people who are younger than me. Like, it feels weird when I say it, so I'll just say Daddy. Locke's a good daddy.
Locke's a daddy. So it's funny because, you know, so in this episode, Charlie continues to be the worst, which is what we've discovered about Charlie on this rewatch. And
this episode especially really kicks off the, like, my least favorite version of Charlie, which is, oh, we'll
I mean,
that. But like, just in this episode, we get like my least favorite flavor of Charlie, which is jealous Charlie.
Jealous, possessive Charlie. It's so funny because, like, I think I remember watching this, you know, back in the day when it aired, and I was like, Charlie, why are you jealous of this, like, old man? Like, what are you doing? And now I'm watching
Seriously.
It like, oh, you should be jealous. Swallow that baby. So,
yeah.
I don't know. John Locke.
If John Locke wanted, like, put his effort into, like, wooing Claire, like, he's a good prospect. He's, you know... The interesting thing at this point in season two, we're at this weird stage where only sometimes does the show acknowledge that, like, they're abandoned on a desert island still. Like, we've now fully so jumped into, the intrigue of the hatch and the videos and the, you know, the experiments of what's going on the island and Desmond is running around there. And, like, there was a point in this episode where Hurley and Rose are, like, hanging up clothes on a line and Rose is like, it's fresh air. I like it better, like, hanging up clothes on a line. And I'm like, you guys are in the middle of the Pacific Ocean without any rescue, and the people you send away keep washing ashore. Like, what is going on with this, like, cool and calm attitude about, like, oh, we'll rough it with the laundry. Like, holy crap.
The coping mechanisms, I suppose.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
But it's funny because something we talked about a couple weeks ago when we were talking about when the hatch was first introduced – and then they sort of back themselves into a corner because they're like, okay, we'll have a fallout shelter sort of thing, like an apartment underground.
Right.
And then I'm like, why isn't every
stranded survivor taking a shift in the hatch. Like, you, none of the, like, red shirts get to have a shower, right? It's just, like, Kate and the series regulars. And then why is Claire still sleeping on the beach with her baby when there's literal shelter? Like,
the second that word began to snake around that beach that there was somewhere with an interior and a, like, cushioned seat, you would have needed the jaws of life to pry me away from that hatch. Like, I can't even begin to express how much, like, it's so funny that everybody's just like, oh, there's this hatch, whatever, like, back to sleeping on this rock, like.
Exactly. There are bunk beds in there. There's at least one movie in there.
There's at least one movie. It's choppy and it's, like, weirdly acted, but yeah.
But I watch it over and over again.
There's the turn of the screw. I'd have read the turn of the screw, like, four different times by this point. Like,
oh, yeah. And I'd like, know every single album back and forth. And
yes.
There's a lot to entertain yourself in that hatch.
Yes.
That the beachy people are being deprived of.
They really are. Yeah.
You mentioned Survivor. We've obviously talked about how Survivor is a, was it an initial inspiration for this? Are you, like, a huge Survivor fan? I have only ever watched one season, which was the Elizabeth Hasselbeck season, coincidentally.
Oh, quite the season to watch. Yeah, yeah, I've watched every episode of Survivor. I'm, like, a huge, that's one of, like, my shows. That's one of, like, my foundational shows.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Are we still, so the question is, like, when does Lost fully move, I mean, not to spoil anything, but, like, when does Lost fully move away from, like, Survivor alliances, people sort of scheming and stuff like that? And I feel like it kind of never does fully move away from that. But, like, where are we now here in this early stage of season two in terms of, like, using Survivor as a blueprint inspiration?
I mean, I still feel like, because it still feels like there are teams, right? There's Team Jack and Team Locke, and it never quite gets to, like, where everybody on the, at some point I thought there was going to be this thing where, like, everybody picks a side and you're either a Jack or a Locke. And it sort of happens that way with, like, Kate and Saeed and, like, the top level people. And that's, I think, the most sort of factiony things get is this, especially in, like, what was the episode where Jack is, like, the entire episode, he's, like, holding people at gunpoint just because he's mad. And, like, he's yelling at Locke about, like, why is it so easy for you to believe?
Right, and, like, yeah. It's never been easy. Sorry.
Right. Yes. And, like, that's the most crystallized that it felt like, oh, right. Man of science, man of faith. These are our two tribes.
Right.
And you're sort of one or the other. And I think, like, you see things like that shaping up, like you do in this episode with Locke sort of pissing off Charlie. And it's like, oh, okay, so Charlie's now going to be a pawn against Locke. You know what I mean? He'll be a chess piece that is sort of anti-Locke. And obviously Sawyer is going to always be on some level anti-Jack because, like, they have that, like, you know, dynamic.
Yeah, it's interesting because the moment that I think is the most Survivor-y moment in recent memory on the show is in the season one finale. They're like stringing up the dynamite to blow the door off the hatch and all this sort of stuff. And they're crouched in the bushes. And Jack goes to Kate, hey, psst, are you on my team? Because we're going to have a John Locke problem. And it's just like, I'm like, right now we're doing this?
Okay. We're doing this conversation right now. Also, one of the most survivory elements in the first season was how Locke established a second banana relationship with Boone, who I'm going to bring up every chance I get. And, like, that's part of the reason, that's only one of the many reasons I got so mad at the show for killing off Boone, was you had that great, like, I know the line was, like, Boone wasn't working out and he wasn't, you know, catching on and, like, viewers didn't care about him, yada, yada. But, like, as a sort of acolyte for Locke and somebody who Locke could, like, shape in his image a little bit, I was like, oh, that to me had a lot of potential.
And, like, there's a lot, we're going to talk about the Carlisle Rutherford, the Lannister twins, Boone
right.
and Shannon.
Right.
This is chiefly why we're here. I just have one more rally show based question for you.
Totally.
We,
yeah.
We get into the Gossip Girl kids.
Yes.
Which is, you and I are big fans of the Great British Bake Off.
Yes.
Every week it's like, it was this last season, it was like you and me and Megan O'Keefe.
Are you going to make me defend David?
No. Okay. We're not. Don't worry. I brought you here to grill. I like David. I'm glad he won.
I love
Spoiler
David.
For the season of Great British Bake Off.
Right.
But what people talk about loving about the Great British Bake Off is when they help each other. And I was just thinking about that during this episode when they're like, when they're literally hoisting Sawyer up a cliff face.
Yeah.
They're helping each other just like on Bake Off.
They are.
The feeling it gave me. And then like, that's the thing about Lost is like, there's so many reasons to fight that when they pull together, it's just extra emotional. You know what I mean?
It's Sun finding the sea urchin needles to help Jack, like, try and, again, all roads lead back to Boone. But like, it's like that kind of thing. Like, I loved whenever, I'm a big fan of, unlikely pairings. So anytime, like, the show would throw two characters together who I wouldn't normally, like, be in a storyline together, I was always like, oh, they're friends.
Like, yeah, no, I love that too. I mean, I love that on Game of Thrones. That's one of my favorite things is you're like, oh, these two on the road together? Okay.
Yeah, let's see what happens. Totally.
All right. So speaking of unlikely pairings, let's talk about Shannon and Saeed and the end of Shannon, et cetera. I have been in this rewatch, especially very defensive of Shannon as a character who had, I think, a lot of potential, a character who I think is, we can view in a much more sympathetic light than we could when the show first aired, just the way our characters moved. Tell me why you love Shannon, why you love Boone, and why you want to talk about them.
I mean, to start with Shannon, because it is her episode, so we'll give her the respect that she deserves for that. I think you're right. I think on this show that was so preoccupied with the island bringing out qualities in the people who were stranded there that they maybe didn't have before or weren't able to, like, fully express before, their, you know, senses of adventurousness or heroism or whatever, that, like, to not see the potential that there was in a character like Shannon, who, like, this episode, especially this episode, feels cruel in a lot of ways. Most especially the part where she's like, by the end, she's just like, she wants to self-actualize. Oh. Right. Yeah, exactly. Yes. Like, everybody thinks I'm worthless. And like, and 5 minutes after that happens, she gets killed to advance the storyline of a brand new character. And I was just like, that is a kick in the teeth. And I'm really, really sad for Shannon for that.
I was getting like, physically angry watching this episode because like, I like this episode, but I think it's sort of silly to put the first and only flashback for a character in the episode where they die. I feel like this should have been like episode 2 of this season or something like that. And then her death would have landed a bit better for me.
For as much as I was annoyed that like Boone's death happened in a Jack flashback episode.
Yeah.
Like at least it wasn't, Boone's first flashback. Yeah. And now at the end of it, he's just going to get like pancaked by this like airplane or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. No, but, and then she's like screaming in the rain to Saeed about how she's worthless and everyone leaves her. And then I'm like, oh my God, they're really about to kill her when she's saying all this stuff and she doesn't get the chance to like show, like, you know, fulfill her potential. Like even if that had just happened a couple episodes ago, I would feel less like stressed about it than it happening literal minutes before she dies to, as you say, like advance. This is obviously a wrinkle for Ana Lucia, but it's also like a fridging for the Saeed character sort of too.
Yeah. Totally. That look on his face at the end where he's just sort of like snarling. And also the fact that Shannon got killed before she could even be like introduced to all the possibilities that the hatch opens up. And I'm just like, this show was just about to break beyond we're surviving on a beach, which is like the most ill-suited to Shannon, like obviously. But like there were so many places that this storyline was going to go with the hatch and just sort of like, you know, the world of this show was opening up at the beginning of this season. And Shannon is mostly kept out of that, like almost entirely kept out of that, is handed Vincent as almost like a boondoggle of just sort of just like, walk this dog around the island until we figure out what we want to do with you. And then the romance with Saeed, which I never really, I don't know if it's not that I never bought it, but like I was certainly never interested in it. Not at the time, not on the rewatch, like whatever. This scene that they had at the beginning of this episode where they're in the tent and they end up like sleeping together and whatnot. I fully, for the first couple minutes, I'm like, is this a flashback to the night Boone died and when they were off on their little date? Because like I couldn't differentiate like where I couldn't place them within their story. Wasn't she mad at him? Like, is this a reconciliation? I don't know what's going on with them. Like, I kind of don't care. And there were so many other ways that, like, you could define Shannon outside of her relationship with a man, like, to not to get, like, all, like, you know, huffy about it. But, like...
Oh, you can get huffy with me.
That's all. That was her whole, you know, she was defined by her relationship with her father in the flashback, and then her relationship with Boone, where, like, Boone's flashback episode in season one could have been argued as, like, a tandem flashback, sort of like a Sun and Jin thing. But, like, it was obviously more Boone's story. And ultimately, you get the sense in season two, when they, you know, eventually, now that they've killed her off, you get the sense that, like, oh, without Boone, there was no real reason to have Shannon around. And that's just, like, that's a bummer.
I mean, they're, we'll talk about how, yeah, they write themselves into the corner sometimes. I mean, well, yeah, here's a non-spoiler thing I can say. Charlie, similarly, I feel like, and we interviewed some of the writers, they talked about this, they went hard and fast on Charlie's backstory, and they're like, oh, huh.
Yeah.
What do we do now?
Right.
Do you want another flashback about addiction? We could do that.
Right.
Like, oh. So.
Can he and his brother have another fight about something?
Yeah, like, yeah, no, exactly. Okay. So, yeah. You know, not to say that, I care about Charlie. There's things to know about Charlie, but there are some corners that they wrote themselves into in the early seasons. And I think Shannon and Boone are two of the most egregious. Couple things. Well, it's funny that you were like, is this a flashback to the night that Boone died? Because she literally is wearing the same outfit she wore the night that Boone died. She changes outfits and then she changes back into literally the same outfit she was wearing when she finds out that Boone died, which is like, she's like, I'm going to pull out my old pink shirt, you know, the pink shirt of death. I'm going to put it on and that's, I'm going to die. And then also someone did the math and it's been like just a few days since Boone died.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's the other thing. Like, also, if I'm on this island with limited wardrobe options.
Yes.
I'm never changing clothes in the middle of the day. Like, you know what I mean? Like, clothes need to last you in this thing. Like, not to get all frugal about it.
No. Get plenty frugal. I mean, Rose can only do so much laundry.
Right. That's my inner Rose sort of coming out there. Yeah.
All right, so let's talk about Boone and Shannon and then, like, the potential there. I do like this flashback. It's a little too, like, Cinderella. Like, would any actual human ever be that cruel to an 18-year-old girl whose dad just died?
Right.
I don't know. But I will say that I, like, gasped with joy and delight every time Boone shows up at that funeral. I'm like, Boone, oh, you're back.
His hair is really going through it. Oh, like, honestly, it's fine. It's, you know, he's got a lot of emotions happening. It's also mullet. Like, they're both supposed to be so much younger at this point. Like, and like these sort of like crucial years too, where it's just like, they're basically like late teens. Are they supposed to be? Is that what we're?
Shannon's 18 and I bet you Boone is supposed to be like 20 or maybe. Yeah. Well, he's drinking and she's like, your mom will freak. So yeah, like not 21, I guess.
Yeah. And so I think a lot of Boone, by the way, speaking of the survivor thing, Boone is the classic example of hotter with a few days or a few weeks of like island scruff on him. Like by the time we got to his like final episodes in season one, it was like Ian Somerhalder is one of the most beautiful people on earth. We can just like admit that. And like putting him through the paces of like, you're going to be like a little sweaty, a little tanned, a little like grimy or whatever. And it's just like, yes, that all of that works. Like, absolutely.
That's funny because I spent a lot of time talking about how I felt like Ian Somerhalder really did not figure out like how to best utilize his hotness until Vampire Diaries. I think it's like, honestly, if you look at him on The Vampire Diaries, and then if you look at him on Lost, the main difference is haircut and hair color. So it's like, he really needs to be a dark brunette. It's like, the blondie bits of Boone are not.
The highlights in this episode are really fighting him in some crucial ways. Yeah, absolutely. But the thing I always loved most about Boone is on this show full of like, you know, doctors and adventurers and like whatever the hell Sawyer brings to the table and like, you know, soldiers, warriors like Saeed is. And like Boone's characteristics are like, he's soft. He's mostly scared and he's like the most beautiful face you've ever seen. And it's just like, oh, two things I was and one thing I wanted when I was like young and impressionable watching the show. And it's just like, okay, like I fully get why Boone really like appealed to me, but like I get very defensive of like the soft boys on like whatever shows that I'm watching because like, especially shows that are very, that attract fandoms like this, especially shows that attract like a lot of male fandoms, which Lost definitely did, not to like discount like the female fandom at all, but like some shows are mostly, you know, female fandom, and this one is just like, this had a lot of male fans. And so I think there was a potential to just be like, only care about the like the tougher sort of like angrier guys. And like Boone's a soft boy, and I you know, they're precious to me.
Who is your favorite soft boy from Game of Thrones?
Tommen.
Tommen's
my precious little Tommen.
Answer.
Yeah.
I thought you were going to say Sam or maybe even John, and then I was going to kick you off the podcast, but no. Tommen.
No,
with his,
it's
like,
definitely
cat.
Tommen. With his cat. Little and blood. He just like, and him and like, and Marjorie together. Yeah. Like, I know that, like, you know, kicking that relationship to a sexual level was weird for all of us, but you know, he deserved better. I'm so glad that that actor is like really getting a big crossover year in terms of his movie roles, because like, good for him. Like, you
what
earned
is,
it.
What is Dean Charles Chapman doing this year?
He's in The King with Chalamet, and he's in, I think he might be in 1917. He was definitely in the Bruce Springsteen movie. The one about the English kid who like becomes a Springsteen fan, which I can't remember now. Blinded by the Light?
Born to Run?
It should have been called Born to Run. It's called Blinded by the Light. which is weird, because like that's a Springsteen song that was made famous by another artist altogether, and like Born to Run would have been a better title for
that. That's really funny. Okay, so you're Tommen.
Which
brings
for sure.
us back to Boone and Shannon.
Yes.
What do you feel like? So I was listening to this interview with Maggie Grace, because I'm curious, like, some actors on Lost are very embittered that they were written off. And they will talk about it. Maggie Grace does not seem to be that kind of person, but she did say that there were some things that she felt were like cruel about Shannon's death, which I think is true.
Yeah.
And then, she talked about Shannon. I've made this parallel, before, but she made it as well, which is the Paris Hilton parallel. And she said, you know, like the kind of women who at the time that Lost first premiered were quote unquote famous for doing nothing. That was like sort of a famous phrase at the time. And then she said, our culture has outgrown her. It's a moment in a culture I'm relieved has passed. We can collectively roll our eyes. And that's so funny, because I'm like, I feel like I like Shannon more than Maggie Grace likes Shannon. So, but I just think that, like, when you see this stuff, like Boone and Shannon in this flashback, I'm like, these archetypes, I'm here for like a Gossip Girl type of story. And also, like, Shannon is smart and, you know, in early episodes, manipulative in a way that I think could have been, interesting to watch on the island.
Exactly. Exactly.
So what would you have liked to have seen? If Shannon and Boone had gotten to live.
I think especially with Shannon, I think you hit the nail right on the head about like her gift for sort of like manipulation, or just like getting people to sort of trust her and talk to her. I think now that we're meeting all of these different other factions of people on the island, you've got the Tailies, and obviously there's another group out there who's like snatching Tailies and like
snatching Tailies.
Right? That Sorry. Sounds terrible. That sounds Great. Like filthy. Yeah. Anyway, but like, yeah, like Shannon would have been probably a really interesting asset in terms of trying to deal with other groups of people. And, you know, again, less strictly survival aspects. And now when we get to more, again, I mean, this brings it back to Survivor the Show. Like, Survivor the Show isn't all about like making fires and catching fish either. Like, it's about building alliances and building trust and like, you know, getting one over on people. And she could have been really good at that.
What's interesting to me is like, I want to talk about Tailie fashion for a second.
Okay. Oh, yes.
Ana Lucia, Michelle Rodriguez, has perhaps my favorite island outfit. And it's like all she wears, which is this black camisole, these low-cut jeans, and then this like with the sleeves ripped off sort of like bomber jacket thing.
Yeah.
And she looks great, especially when she takes the jacket off. Like, Michelle Rodriguez in that black camisole with the low-rise jeans, like, maybe my favorite island outfit. She looks so good in it.
She looks like as well-suited to island fashion as anybody on the show. Yeah, absolutely.
Meanwhile, Cynthia Watros.
I was going to say, poor Libby.
Gets saddled with this insane outfit that I'm like, who put that on her? What were they thinking? Was any woman involved? Why did they let poor Libby have a bra? Like, what is happening over there? So
I always think it's so funny too when you look at like the actresses. We're like, Michelle Rodriguez got famous for a movie called Girl Fight, and then like she was also, by this point, she had been in at least one Fast and the Furious movie. And so like there's like, you know, that's her sort of like, that's her genre, that's her milieu. And like she's like, you know, she's a tough girl, and like she's like, she fits this island sort of like a glove too. And meanwhile, like Cynthia Watros is like soap opera actress, sitcom actress, like daytime Emmy winner, like sort of like, you know, she's a house cat. And now she's on this island and she's just sort of like bedraggled as all hell and like subject to this, like, you're right, there's like terrible wardrobe. And
yeah.
Good on you, Libby. Thank you for trying.
Meanwhile, Sam Anderson, who plays Bernard, has fashioned himself like an ascot, which I just like, I always, okay, let's circle back to Survivor for a second.
Yes.
One of my favorite aspects of Survivor is the bandana they're given and like what
they the buffs. They're buffs. Yes.
Their buff and what they choose to do with their buff. You know what I mean? Like for me, I'm like actually literally wearing a bandana right now. It would be on my head because my hair gets like greasy quickly and I always have that bandana on my
I'm sweaty of brow, so I would always have that on my forehead. Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. like a sort of, what do you call
like
it?
Like a sweatband. Yeah.
Sweatband. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
But like, so I love how like some of the women on Survivor are like, this is a tube top.
Yep.
And you're like, is it?
This is a tube top. This is a mini skirt. Like, yeah, it is very, very, versatile out there for sure. But
Bernard would be like, this is an ascot.
Yes.
This is a neckerchief.
Yes.
He's a neckerchief guy.
So. I love that, like, for all of these people who are on the show, like, Bernard and Rose are the most, like, I would watch several spin-off shows about Bernard and Rose. Prequel shows, like, anything just, like, you wanted to put them on, like, you know, a weird spin-off, like, cooking show or something like that. Like, everything about Bernard and Rose remains so tantalizing, and that sounds weirdly sexual, but like, there's always just something that's just like, man, I just want more of Bernard and Rose. I want to know more about, like, I don't know, their love.
Yeah. I was watching this episode thinking I would definitely watch a Shannon and Boone prequel Gossip series.
Oh yeah, for sure. Right? Absolutely. Yeah.
Like, and let's say they're like 2 years apart, so they would like be going through their prep school together at the same time.
I want the show where she does get she finds a way to get the Martha Graham internship, and like she doesn't do it via her stepmother's purse strings. She has to like find another arrangement, and like he finds himself in New York too, and like they're both sort of like, that's the situation. And he has to find a way to like keep her like supported, you know, behind his mom's back or something like that. I don't know. Figure it out. Like, find a way to like scam that mom as much as possible. Basically.
Oh yeah. Bring her, like, bleed this evil Martha Stewart dry.
Yes. Exactly. Exactly.
I'm envisioning the opening credits for that show that you're describing, and it's very like Felicity, right?
Yes.
Like,
oh my
them
God.
And like subways are going by and some stringy acoustic music is playing.
Absolutely.
Speaking of which, this episode has, a Dave Matthews Band sound cue.
It sure does. I wrote that down. Absolutely.
Which I think
of course she would be.
Yeah.
Of course she would be listening to Dave Matthews Band at that point in time. Absolutely.
Absolutely. Of course. So, but I was just like, that is maybe one of my favorite music cues ever on Lost is Dave Matthews Band playing in Shannon's little apartment that she shares.
Absolutely. Yeah. Love that. It's interesting that this is a no Jack and no Kate episode.
I thought that too. You see Jack like barely in the flashback, right?
Right.
So yeah, barely any Jack, no Kate, no Sun, but Sun just had an episode.
Yes.
So there's at least that, and I think that's it. But yeah, I wrote that down too. I was like, fascinating. Isn't it fascinating?
I wonder if that like underlines, maybe this is just sort of like, you know, connecting dots that don't need to be connected, but like underlining Shannon's difficulty making female friendships on the beach, that like her big episode and like Kate's not around because she and Kate don't really have a relationship. She and Claire don't really have a relationship. She and Sun don't really have a relationship. And it's just like, that was another thing that I felt sad about with Shannon, was just like, she was so isolated on that island. She basically had relationships with Boone, who died, Saeed, who's like, you know, they have their romantic sort of like whatever. And then her like half a second of like conversation with Walt, which gets her saddled with the dog. And that's basically it. Like, it's weird when like you get to the end and she's shot and everybody's sort of like, the looks on their faces, and you look at like Michael and Jin, and I'm just like, What is your relationship to her? I'm dying to know. Like, I know, like, we're all going to be, like, the reactions are very appropriate. Somebody's been shot in front of them and whatnot. But, like, what does she mean to you specifically? Like, what is, tell me her story.
Jim, I kind of believe because he's, like, a bit of a tenderheart. But, like, but yeah. Michael, I'm like, Michael, you never talk to Shannon, like,
right.
ever.
Right. You were building that ship. You weren't paying attention. Yeah. Or that raft, rather.
Jin, at least, I think, like, had a conversation with Sun about Shannon at some point, so at least there was, like, that. I don't know. Yeah, there's this moment a couple episodes before this, when Claire discovers the messages in the bottle, and then she and Shannon bring the message in the bottle to Sun.
To Sun, right.
And then Sun decides to bury them. And I was just like, that's a glimpse into, like, these, and they don't run it by Jack, they don't run it by Locke, they just do it. And I'm like, I love that.
That thing with Sun, by the way, drove me a little bit crazy. I know that's not in this episode, but the whole thing where, like, she loses her ring, and just, like, you couldn't manage to connect the dot to, like, the half of a day you spent digging in the sand? Like, to go check that area? Like, no. I don't know, Sun, come on.
But that potential for a relationship for Shannon with Claire, with Sun, I actually really love the scene in the pilot where, like, Shannon is sunbathing and, like, Claire, enormously pregnant, sort of, like, hunkers down the sand next to her and sort of was like, you know, I used to have a waist or, like, whatever.
Yes.
So just sort of, like, he's, like, trying to emulate Shannon. She's like, I can sunbathe too, you know, and I'm just like, that could have been a fun thing, like, and then give freaking Claire something to do outside of Chally, you know, like, that would have been nice.
Lots of stuff in this episode happens because people don't believe women. I'm just gonna say, like, people didn't believe Shannon and didn't believe Ana Lucia when Ana Lucia kept being like, where, like, Michael was like, explain it to me, and it's just like, or you could just trust her, how about that?
No, that's a theme of when Saeed is like, you are dreaming, or like, whatever.
Yes.
So many times when Jack has done that to a woman on Lost, Jack is like, sorry, Claire, you're sleep deprived, or sorry, Kate, you're, like, you know, and I'm just like,
which, imagine that coming from a doctor, even in the real world, of just, like, that level of, like, not buying what you've been told and just, like, listen to your patients.
I mean, Jack, you've seen your dead father in the jungle, so maybe you can, like,
the other thing.
Believe other people.
Jesus. Yeah.
It's very, like, you need to take a nap to a toddler. And yes. And it happens again and again on Lost to the women only. So
yes.
Interesting. All right, now is the time on the podcast where we like to thank our small council members. They support us. They can come watch Star Wars with us live in Colorado. They are the best. They are Amaru Luce, Vanessa Marshall, Seth Freilich, Corinne Ball, Jessica Scott, Matthew Wilson, Tim McGregor, Sarah Cooper, Jeff Libby, Amy Harper, Brian Catt, Matthew Munden, Mark Rodriguez, Jessica Trowbridge, Jay Fornes, Patrick Grattan, Riley Pratt, Sarah Wolf, and I know if I mispronounce Seth's name, I'm never going to hear the end of it, so over to you.
I have a list of folks that we would love to thank. Folks are on the small council and know all the details of our fun little movie club excursion. This includes Aaron Michael Augustini, Francis Adrian, Kevin Gonzalez, Jay Maggio, Eric Procyse, Arthur Wynn, Alicia Dennis, Scott Rumsey, Richard Hoska, Tracy, Luke Sweet, Sheila Curran, Nate, Anthony Goel, Ralph Helm, Kelsey McKinnell, Chelsea Patchell, Adrian Martinez, Samuel Fry, and Christopher McTerre. Thank you all very much.
And I have a list of people also to thank. I would like to thank Torin Solly, Sam, Kendall Abernathy, Thomas Hankins, Tony Rollins, Anna Jackson, Will Nazer, Taylor Hughes, T. Ledoux, Elisa Love, Savio Nguyen, Georgia O'Brien, Eleanor Corkish, Alejandro Villarreal, Rachel Aluli, Cassidy, Stuart Wynn, Lee Rock, Nicholas Ng, Elizabeth Hines, and Nikki Jones. Thank you all so much for being part of the Small Council. And we're back in the storm. guys, I want to talk about what you think the whispers are and how they're connected to Walt, if at all. Is anybody being led into danger maliciously by the island in the end of this episode? I guess is a better way to start off.
Yes, no. I think. Well, okay. here's why I think yes.
All right.
I do think that there is something to the weird mystery stuff of the island happening when people are at a point of stress or point. It's just a plot device that they use where it's like anytime we need to heighten the stress level of our characters, the whispers are going to show up. So this is a perfect example of it because everything's sort of under control. Like it's becoming under control with Ana Lucia and Mr. Echo and the Tailies, even after they lose Cindy, because they're like figuring out if they're going to go after her or not. But then the whispers happen and that's when they get really freaked out. And I think it's, that is ultimately what propels the anxiety. It is what sort of causes Ana Lucia to shoot Shannon because she's already on edge because of the whispers and the fact that Cindy just disappeared. So there's like, she's just going to shoot whatever pops out of the jungle. And that's how Shannon dies. So I think yes, but I don't know how coordinated the island is being about it. I just think that that's what the show needs to do there.
This is an explanation I really like. It's by a Reddit user called Oh Hi Mark 108. And Oh Hi Mark writes, at this point, Walt has been captured by the others and is probably in room 23. This is the like Clockwork Orange sort of sensory overload room, right? We know he spent time in there. While he's getting his subconsciousness blasted with light and music, his inherent ability is sort of misfiring. He's not getting through the way he wants to, covered in water, speaking backwards, etc. Walt's function is actually very much like the whispers. He appears to provide warnings. He was trying to warn Shannon she was about to be shot by Ana Lucia. He gestures for her to be quiet and says backwards, they're coming and they're close. There's been a lot of debate about Walt and pushing the button. I don't think Walt was advising people to not press the button. I think he was advising them to avoid the hatch altogether. A lot of bad stuff went down in there, and Walt had already warned Locke not to open it. All of his other messages were warnings. It would make sense that this was a well-intentioned advice from his perspective. So I think we divorced soggy, tall, misfiring Walt from the whispers. I think Walt is trying to warn Shannon, right? And then,
that makes sense.
And then the whispers, once again, it's like souls of people trapped on the island. I mean, that's the definition of the whispers are, and it still like doesn't make a lot of sense to me. I think
it would almost make more sense if it was the smoke monster, because we know the smoke monster's MO is to like try and test people. So like if the smoke monster's doing the whispers, that's makes sense. But the fact that they explained it as like it's just the souls, it's like, well, what do they care?
Where the souls are like trying to bring the two groups together, right? And they're just not very good at it.
I think they're trying to like warn them. Like Ben tells Rousseau later in the series, he tells Rousseau to run if she hears the whispers because it means her life is in danger. So I feel like it's sort of like it's meant to be a warning, but it's like they're, like you said, they're bad at it.
They're just bad at warning people.
It's like when it's like they know you're about to pass over into their area of existence.
Get ready. Get the sofa like, ready. Get the sofa bed ready. Shannon's coming.
You're going to die. You're going to die.
Don't be here soon.
Shannon, if we yelled this out, you'd be really freaked out though.
Shannon,
it's really awesome on this side. Just let it happen.
Shannon, do you need dietary restrictions? We can make you a gluten-free dinner. Welcome dinner.
Could you imagine an afterlife with dietary restrictions?
On the
what
island.
An island.
That's not purgatory. That's hell. All right. So is that sufficiently answer your question about whispers? I mean, not
well,
that,
I,
that
it's
true.
I mean, it's definitely something to think about. Yeah. I don't think there's a good answer because the show needs some stuff to happen. So it made up some stuff to make the show happen.
Yeah.
Which isn't great, but I also like that theory that Walt's being, you know, his electromagnetic powers are being dampened by...
He can't focus them on the computer.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Do we think he's wet in both the times he appears to Shannon because of the rain here?
I think it's because when last we saw him, he was in the water.
I mean, that makes sense also. That's why I'm asking the question though.
No, I didn't mean that in a dull way. That's what my tone implied. I just meant more like, that's what I think. I think it's to invoke the fact that the last time we, the audience, saw him, he was in the water.
Cause so far, rain seems to denote violence more often than not when it shows up.
Well, I think it's a I don't know if it's thematic. I feel like it's a good filmmaking technique to like ramp up like tension and confusion, disorientation.
For sure.
Yeah,
but it's something the show is aware of, at least because we had Jack fighting Ethan in the rain twice, because we had Charlie shooting Ethan in the rain, because we had Shannon trying to shoot Locke in the rain. It's interesting that Walt appears as if he's trying to warn somebody from within a like pouring rain shower.
Maybe it's just Jacob crying.
I have a weird theory. I'm hesitant to read too into when it's raining and when it's not on this show, because I think it just sort of rains a lot in Hawaii. So there are some scenes where I don't know if they necessarily knew they were going to have to shoot them in the rain. It just rained. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, we'll investigate.
That's one of the hard, all I'm saying is that's one of the harder ones to peg. Like, what does it mean when it's raining? Cause it's like, I've watched a lot of behind the scenes video and it looked like it was just always raining.
Oh, just saying, what does it mean when it rains is close enough to get a garbage song stuck in my head. So let's go to an email from one of our listeners, right?
I'm only happy when
don't put it all the way in there.
Only happy
all right, back to Lost.
All right, so this email's from Demetrius, who emailed us a couple weeks ago to ask about Lost Easter eggs and Watchmen. And this is one we couldn't read in the calm. But I do want to say, if you're listening to this storm this week, you will have already seen episode 5 of Watchmen, which is the Looking Glass episode, which more than the Tim Blake Nelson character Looking Glass, which more than any other episode of Watchmen feels very lost, because it's got this like cold open flashback to like a young Looking Glass. So
this is the one that I'm going to watch right when we're done recording this.
It's so good.
I can't wait.
So good. But it starts super losty with this flashback. So, to the point where, like, I mean, sorry to spoil it for you, Neil, but to the point where, like,
that's okay.
If you're watching this episode and you don't have Lost in your head, you don't even know that you're watching Looking Glass necessarily. And then later you're like, that's a good casting for a young Tim Blake Nelson. That dude's hella gawky looking. All right.
It's almost to say that Damon Lindelof has learned and or has enough money now to cast just straight up younger versions.
He cloned him in a little egg in a lake, and he pulled him up and he turned him into
He threw out a couple first.
Yeah. All right, so Demetrius writes in, in episode 3 of Watchmen there's a bomb attached to a heart rate monitor, just like Martin Kimi did on season 4 of Lost. Both men wearing the heart rate monitor get killed instantly and the bomb goes off. And then he says, this may be something of a stretch, but in episode 4, there's a scene where Ozymandias fishes babies and then goes and puts a record on. It reminded me of the Desmond introduction scene in season 2 and the Jacob introduction scene in the season 5 finale. But not to mention Juliet. Like, there's, and Miles' dad, Pierre Chang, also has a put the record on introduction episode. I think there's like 4 season premieres. That's maybe just 3 to 4 season premieres that start with putting a record on in Lost. So all right, so that is from Demetrius. If there's any other Lost Easter eggs on Watchmen that you guys see, please email this, and I'm actually like super interested in that. All right, we get our third mention of Goodwin, I think, and we will of course find out the story of Goodwin in the next episode. Episode 7 gives us the whole Goodwin story. But Pat, good old friend of the show, Pat Spinoggle, wrote in about Goodwin and how he is emblematic of something that Lost likes to do. He goes, I enjoyed your breakdown of the episode and found, particularly mentioning the introduction of one of my favorite minor characters in the show, Goodwin. Goodwin embodies a thematic element of Lost, great characters who are presented in such a way that we viewers make assumptions about them and then have the rug pulled out from under us. The fact that Goodwin is introduced to us first as just a reference by Libby and then as a dead body, but made such an impression on me that I was later engaged whenever he appeared in the future flashbacks on the show, indicates the strength of not only the storytelling, but maybe how much I was invested in the show when it aired. If I can indulge in some nostalgic retelling for a moment. When our protagonists from the middle section of Oceanic 815 discover that their captors were in the tail section of the plane, by the way, only the pilot was a fronty being in the front section that crashed in the jungle. It's clear that the tailies suffered much more, a much more other related violence than the survivors from the main fuselage crash. So when Goodwin is mentioned, remember what happened to Goodwin, we get some sense on our own that the others did something to this tailie named Goodwin. When Jin sees Goodwin's corpse and Mr. Echo casually identifies him as that's Goodwin, it's chilling. I assume that the others had killed Goodwin, had staked him out as some kind of territorial marker, and that the tailies had been too terrified to move him. So when the living Goodwin is introduced in the flashback-driven next episode, my reaction at the time was, oh, fuck, poor Goodwin. I had no reason to distrust him. I was sympathetically and positively inclined towards him, waiting with some anticipatory dread for when he met his fate at the hands of the others. So you can imagine my surprise when all my assumptions were wrong about him. Later on, seeing Goodwin through Juliet's eyes was kind of refreshing and almost brought some of the positive feelings I had for Goodwin before I knew that he was an other. I mean, in a sense, Goodwin was killed by another, killed by Ben, who was deliberately putting Goodwin into a dangerous situation. Also, I have now 100% decided that John Locke is a villain because I have no doubt, based on his gullibility to charismatic personalities, that Locke would have definitely voted for Trump in 2016. Damn it,
this
John.
This took a turn.
Damn it, John, I had been rooting for you. Love, Pat. So... that's bad. So yeah, I mean, I think, you know, for all our critiques about Shannon and some of the other stuff that happens in this episode, like the breadcrumb trail to the Goodwin reveal, I think is very masterfully laid, in this season. Do you guys have any Goodwin thoughts that you want to dwell on here?
Well, I mean, we're definitely going to be coming back to them, true. But I like the thought of Trump being like, I've saved the world. There's a man in a hatch, and he presses a button every 108 minutes, and I fix it all. It's just a button, really, and he presses the button.
It's really an example of what goes wrong when you believe in yourself a little too much, which I think is John Locke's problem most of the time. Although, I don't know. I don't know if I agree with that assessment of future John Locke.
I love the...
He's better than that.
That, like, it's such a metaphorical choice on a show like Lost, but if you were to suddenly make it into, like, a dumb political choice of, like, of course, yeah. There's just a hatch with a button that saves the world. Oh, God, I like this season a lot.
To loop it back to Goodwin, I will just say that I never thought of him that way as, or I will say this. I brought this up earlier when we talked about the others, how like we meet Ethan and he feels like this monster. And then later we like meet him and we're kind of like at least somewhat sympathetically inclined towards him. And it hadn't occurred to me, and maybe you guys tried to explain it to me, or maybe some emails tried to explain it to me, but that this is sort of like a longer version of what we see with like Jin and Sawyer in season one or whatever. You know, like we meet our survivors and we make our assumptions about them, then we learn something about them in a flashback. And that's essentially mm-hmm. what happens with the others, is that we like meet them and they're all like these monsters, these violent people, Goodwin and Ethan, who have infiltrated the camp. And they're not like great guys, but like to give Goodwin a backstory of this like love story with Juliet that I get kind of invested in, to be honest with you. You know, or to give Ethan this backstory of like him as a kid, like all this stuff is kind of, you know, that's Lost doing its thing. That's Lost being right. Like, oh, you think you know who this person is? You don't. Let me give you some more information. So
I do think that there are some of them that take place over long periods of time.
Yeah.
And then the ones like Goodwin, I feel like, until we come back to him much later, like, I think I may have been inclined, like Pat, to like Goodwin initially. Cause I think, especially, and you talked about this earlier, where this next episode we're about to watch, the other 48 days, is a sort of soft reboot of the pilot, where you're seeing the events from the Tailey's perspective. And I think that, you know, obviously there's a lot that rhymes to Lost. but I think the fact that it happens so quickly with Goodwin, like in a couple of episodes, right? It's like basically next episode that we find out sort of that he was, really was another. Like, I think at this point it's in question. And then
I disagree.
I haven't watched next week's episode.
Yes, you do find out in the next week's episode, but this, I don't think it's in, I think like you're laying your, I think every indication that we've had so far is that he was a passenger on 8:15.
And he's one of the ones that was gotten
that they lost. And I think only if you already know that he turned, could you view this as like a, is that Goodwin another? Like, I think there's no hint that he's another until the turn in episode 7.
Yeah, that makes sense. The way I read the scene between Echo and Jin, where they talk about Goodwin, is probably significantly colored by the fact that I know that Goodwin's not a good guy.
Right.
Or at least not at this point.
Yeah, well, it's the same thing with Anna Lucia, who picks, you know, gives a lot of warnings, but picks all of her warnings words very specifically. Like, you know, this many people were taken. And then Cindy says something about the kids, but nobody else says anything about the kids. And so we don't know that the kids were taken. And so it's all, yeah, weird mystery plotting. Another thing that reads differently that came up this week during the podcast is when Joanna was talking about wanting to see like Locke together with like, you know, Claire. They kind of become like the losers of the beach thing to the island. Aaron gets out barely, but both of those people unfortunately get, at least in this life, kind of lose.
Well, we don't know. I mean, we don't really know, because like it's possible that Claire gets on the Jira flight, whatever, and is fine.
It's possible. It's deep, also possible that Hurley comes back and gives her her mind back or something.
Fine.
She's okay.
I like
to
hope that for Claire, that she's fine. That she and Kate raised the baby and it's fine. Sawyer helps.
She didn't just raise a squirrel baby.
No.
Yeah.
Are they a thruple at that point? Sawyer, like, and Kate and Claire?
Not really. Like, I think Sawyer and Kate are bone. Like, I always thought that Sawyer and Kate were like, all right, let's bone down with each other until like Juliet and Jack show up in the afterlife, right? But I like a version of like they get on the Ajira flight, they set up house, and as Claire slowly rehabilitates herself, she stays in like the in-law unit or whatever, and Aaron's there so they can keep an eye on Claire and the baby, but that they are like consoling each other. Kate's like, sorry I came back and got your girlfriend super killed. all right.
So he's like, sorry I chose her over you.
He shouldn't be.
No. I Juliet him. Rules.
Juliet does rule. All right. This email's from Grant, and it's called Variables plus Constants, Fate plus Free Will. Responding to the recent Storm segment regarding Randy's theory of free will / Slaughterhouse-5 and your discussion of it, I'm going to refer to my previous email regarding time travel / block universe to try to keep this short. And it is, like, for Grant, this is, like, the shortest email I've ever seen. too often the mistake is made that fate and free will, constants and variables are mutually exclusive. The equation is a combination of both. If fate alone dictated the story, the characters would passively do nothing and allow the world to just happen, like our detached friend Dr. Manhattan or even Billy Pilgrim, who in Slaughterhouse-5 is a very passive and resigned character. The show makes a point to show us this isn't the case. Miles discusses this in season 5. Instead, the choices our characters make, their free will, the variable in the equation, enacts fate. They must be free to act for their fate to occur. It's not Jack or Locke, it's Jack and Locke. When they are separated or function as an either-or dichotomy, everyone dies and all goes to shit. When they come together, when their philosophies unite, we come to the satisfactory wake up and resolution of the series finale. Live together, die alone. Fate plus free will is the argument the show makes, not one or the other. Love you guys. See you in another life, Grant. And I just want to follow up on that really quickly, because there's this moment that when John Locke is swaddling the baby, where he says something about, you know, when we're born, we like, it's only later in our lives that we demand to be free. And when we're born, we want to be like sort of swaddled up. And I thought that I like wrote that down as a very significant John line, to me. And, yeah, so I really like what Grant has to say here about it. It's not either or. When we talk about Jack on a journey to becoming Locke, it's not like Jack turns into Locke. It's like Jack holds on to some of his stuff, but like accepts the John side of
things into himself as well. Does that make any sense? I don't know. What do you guys think?
Jack opens up his heart.
He unlocks him.
Maybe even opens his third eye.
Dave. Dave?
He un-John-locks. because at this point, at the point where we are watching currently season two, all we really think of between them is man of science, man of faith. And it's this argument between what are we destined to do versus is the universe just random and we need to deal with it? And, if the ultimate thing about the show is that they both sort of meet in the, I guess John doesn't really meet in the middle, does he? John's story goes off the
but that's why end he of dies, right? Like, I mean, that's why he dies, because he can't, like.
Right. Okay. So the idea is that Jack makes it longer because he opens himself up to both sides of the argument.
Okay. I like that. I don't know. Okay. What do you think, Dave?
No, that's not a bad one.
I don't have a really solid answer as it pertains to the show either way, because there's also, like, you know, the whole Faraday statement of it all and the things I said last week about, you know, dramatic action needing a certain degree of choice. But I will say, as, like, in my actual life, the difference between feeling like I have a purpose and feeling like it's all random is the difference that Jack, I think, goes through. Whether or not that's true or not, Jack is in a really interesting position at the beginning as the man of science, where he's like, he fixed his wife through like some miracle, but he still fixed it. Like, he still put the tendons together. He physically got in there and he did it. He could sort of explain that part. But then when it gets to the point about why his wife, he freaks out emotionally. He's like, well, I must have to marry her. This must be fate. Any sort of indication that he doesn't have to make the decision, that there is something he's supposed to be doing, is something that Jack does very easily. Like, telling on his father comparatively, he looks very like he struggled with it a lot. But when it came to the moment, it was, oh no, she was pregnant. Suddenly this is the decision that's basically made for me. When he gets to the end, when he has to face off, or when he has to go back to the island, Locke convinces him that it has to be that way, and it takes away his choice. And that's why in his flash sideways, he has to deal with the David of it all, because he has to get, like, some agency back, and that he can choose his own fate in some sort of way. So I definitely think the show does try to, like, have it both ways. But I don't think it's necessarily picking a side versus, is this always supposed to happen or do their choices make any difference? It's the emotional journey we go on to feel like we have purpose. And whether we come across that from that, from the man of science perspective or from the man of faith perspective, I think Lost is very good at showing both the positives and negatives of both of those approaches. But I'm not sure the show comes down one way or the other, which I'm sure we'll be tracking for another 4.5 seasons on this podcast in this section.
Yeah, this whole whatever happened idea of Lost, which I'm sort of like in the throes of and in rewatching season 5, and Grant mentioned this too, like this thing that Miles says in season 5 when he's talking about, it's the episode the episode where Saeed thinks about killing kid Ben, right? Baby Hitler. And Miles says, you can't change anything. Your maniac Iraqi buddy shot Lennis. That is what always happened. It's just, we never experienced how it all turns out. Get used to it. But the good news is that Lennis didn't die. So that means the kid can't either. He'll be fine. And yeah, this whole, that fate, free will enacts fate. I need to think about that more, but that's a really interesting thing to think about. So. And all of this, what this all circles back to, you know, if we want to boil it down to, like, what are Damon Lindelof and Carlton Cuse most interested in talking about? What is Damon Lindelof specifically interested in talking about? And it seems to me to be, like, faith and is there something larger?
And how
guiding us.
Fathers are constantly fucking it up.
Well, yeah, but yep. Like Father God, you know, sort of thing, right?
Yeah.
You know? So, father, the
can I trust my father? Can I trust my God?
Yeah, yeah. And what does that mean in terms of how it, like, what choices do any of the choices I make actually matter, or am I on a path? don't know. It's Lost. What a fun show.
Boom.
Lost. It is. Boom. Lost. All right. Neil, remind us where we're going next week, because it's not back to Soggy Shannon corpse.
It really isn't. We are headed to a galaxy far, far away, a long time ago. We're going to do some time travel. Star Wars season begins next week, a week after you hear this. We'll be putting out our episode about the prequels. So watch the prequels. And then eventually, we'll roll into our other stuff. One note on when we're coming back to Lost, just in case there's anyone here who's like panicking because you need to hear us talk about what happens in the next episode. I doubt it because you're in the storm. But our next Lost episode will be released in January, and it will be the other 48 days. And mysteriously, does not identify a single character as the flashback. So, but it's worth saying, yes, beginning of January, we shall be returning to Lost. In the meantime, stick around. It's Star Wars season.
Star Wars! Excellent. Guys, speaking of Star Wars, I'm sure we're around the internet already talking about things, or in Neil's case, just straight up telling people what the 100 best movies of the decade are. So why don't we start with Neil Miller? Where can people find more of your work online?
Well, you can get all the really hard work over at filmschoolrejects.com, where we have just so many lists. So many. I have so many spreadsheets. You can also follow me on Twitter at Rejects, where The Mandalorian continues to force me to tweet about it because it's so much fun. And don't forget to get all the information on our show at Storm Podcast on Twitter. It's pretty tight.
And Joanna Robinson.
You can find me on VanityFair.com. You can follow me on Twitter at Joe Wrote This. You can hear me talking about The Mandalorian on the podcast Still Watching Mandalorian, or Award Season on Little Gold Men, or My So-Called Life on the Boiler Room Cast, but mostly Star Wars on the Storm Podcast.
Star Wars.
Nothing but Star Wars.
If they should buy wars, what would I do? All right.
I'm Dave Gonzalez. You can find me on Twitter at DA7E. You could find me recapping The Mandalorian for Thrillist at Thrillist.com. You could find me on the Fighting in the War Room podcast talking about other things that are happening and probably Star Wars. And even though I am amongst the fallen, not like Shannon, more like Sawyer, I have to urge you not to fall down.
At Ability Chiropractic, they do things differently. They believe lasting health starts with understanding how your body truly works, not masking pain with quick fixes. Their doctors take time to educate and empower you to take control of your wellness journey. Through gentle, customized adjustments, they help you restore proper function and unlock your body's natural healing power. That's why Columbus families have trusted Ability Chiropractic since 2012. See the difference for yourself. Book your appointment today at abilitychiro.com.